Robinson with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! You weren't expecting it, but hey, looky here. It's Friday on the front porch on the horn. It is, in fact, for those of you going, he's running a rerun. No, it is the 25th day of October 2013. This program is live. And I'm happy to be here. But I'm not here necessarily by choice. Well, I am here by choice. What am I saying? Got up, got ready to leave this morning, packed up, took off. Something wasn't right. And guess what? Bad tire. You know, of the belt sticking through variety. Blowout kind of, well, around here they're called Maypops. And the fun part of it was nobody had a tire to replace it. We'll have to order those in. That's what I heard. I can order that. Have it here in a couple of days. Anybody ever seen Doc Hollywood?
Yeah.
So here we are. And I am. I'm happy that we're going to get to have our little end-of-the-week conversation, I hope. I'm not sure, but Duncan may be putting out the word for the usual suspects. Out where Duncan is, they're called a thumper, which is interesting because that's also my nickname. Maypop, thumper, yeah. So, trying to behave like an adult, and you have to understand that sometimes that's a challenge for me. Just ask Agnes. I decided I would not put my family at the hazard of a tire prone to blowing. So, we're here. And I think we're going to have a Jim Dandy little conversation. At least I hope we do. Friday on the front porch. That means we'll have the usual you bring whatever's on your mind kind of free-for-all just to close off the week. Hey, we've never had two days in a row of Friday on the front porch. Of course, yesterday was Thorn in the Front Porch Thursday or something like that. But, yeah, nice, right? So the chat room is open and working. Hey, Anthropogene. Hey, Duncan. Hey, Betsy. And more to come as people figure out that we actually are live. And for the third day in a row, we are streaming live both on the Horn Stream and at ustream.tv/channel/head-on-with-bob-kincaid, K-I-N-C-A-I-D. Just trying to make it a little easier for folks to find the program who go looking. And I'm told the audio works quite nicely. Over there at Ustream. And Lord knows, after the initial frustration of realizing we were going precisely nowhere today, and it is deeply frustrating, believe me. This was one of those kind of had to be there things. Passing of a generation. Not to be there feels terrible. But as my sister, the good one, said to me, circumstances do not ask our preferences. Very true. You know, this is, so thanks for the kindly offer of the Road Angels, Kate, but looks like they get the weekend off. And we will see what Monday brings. Of course, Monday will bring Dr. Bill O'Brien. He'll be picking up where he left off. And that will be at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. Just a general reminder, his podcast feed is up at whiterosesociety.org under Bill O'Brien. And if you're not taking that, if you're not checking out what he has to say, you're missing out on probably the best explanation of American history you're likely to find anywhere on the interweb tubes. Always with the possibility for full interactivity. So, there. Yes. And I need to put out some thanks. Thanks very kindly to Diane and to Don. Between the two of them, $130 rolled in as a sort of, related to the anniversary. At least the, yeah. So thank you very much, Diane and Don. Maybe we're going to, I don't know, if you want to, we can try to get out front of the beginning of program next week and the end of October. Because October is ending quickly. Let's see. 28, 29, 30. 4 days in October left with next week's broadcast week. PayPal button, you know where that is. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, as is the traditional mail address. The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV25801. Remember, checks and money orders should not be made payable to Bob Kincaid, but should, in fact, be made payable to the Horn or Head on Communications, because that makes it much easier for Boss Man Wayne to deal with them when he sends them down to the credit union. And Carl noting by Facebook, me listen to podcast or night. That's the beautiful thing about new media. Enjoy it whenever you wish. And, of course, you can always email the program if you're listening live, late, whatever. Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, @gmail.com. Twitter, @BobKincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D. Bob Kincaid on Facebook. Bob Kincaid on LinkedIn. Am I missing anything? I think I'm The Horn on Ustream and over at... over at Skype, of course, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. All good, all good. So where to start this evening? It is Friday on the front porch, and that means we don't necessarily cover things that... Well, we take a run at things that might not otherwise make the cut. And I don't know if Dr. John is out there right now. I kind of hope he's not. Because this is in his bailiwick, and it doesn't do any good for brilliant young academics to go running around the quadrangle, screaming and tearing at their hair. We go now, of course. I mean, of course, to Texas. And a taxpayer-funded charter school, or schools. It is called iSchool. Little I, big S, little C-H-O-O-L. iSchool. Get it? iSchool High. Where the textbook that deals with the issue of the theory of evolution reads as follows. Hitler has written that the Aryan race would be the leader in all human progress, To accomplish that goal, all lower races should either be enslaved or eliminated. Apparently, note the use of the adverb there, the theory of evolution and its survival of the fittest philosophy had taken root in Hitler's warped mind. This is from a textbook? That doesn't sound like textbook. Textbook is a sort of language, isn't it? So there was Adolf Hitler, plinking away at his old typewriter, working on Mein Kampf, and in the other hand, flipping pages through The Origin of the Species, only he didn't. This has been outed by an engineer by the name of Joshua Bass, who sent his son to iSchool High. Has Apple sued them yet? Because he wanted him to have a good, solid college prep education. And that's where that textbook quote came from, that good, solid college prep education. Assuming that one is going to go to the University of Athens in, 900 CE. The curriculum used at iSchool High, I really can't, is called Responsive Ed. Turns out Responsive Ed was founded by Donald R. Howard, former owner of Accelerated Christian Education. How did we know? Accelerated Christian Education is a fundamentalist curriculum, Salon writes, that teaches young earth creationism as a fact. Responsive Ed has textbooks that, in addition, contain passages like this. And I'm usually it's me telling y'all to strap in. This time I think I need to strap myself in. Here we go. This is so much fun. Not. Have you heard? This is a high school textbook, and it starts with, have you heard? What is this, Mr. Rogers? Have you heard of the Loch Ness Monster in Scotland? Nessie, for short, has been recorded on sonar from a small submarine, described by eyewitnesses and photographed by others. Nessie appears to be a plesiosaur. Could a fish have developed into a dinosaur? As astonishing as it may seem, many evolutionists theorize that fish evolved into amphibians and amphibians into reptiles. This gradual change from fish to reptiles has no scientific basis. No transitional fossils have ever been or ever will be discovered because God created each type of fish, amphibian, and reptile as separate, unique animals. And Eve named them. Now, I added the Eve part. That was from the reference to Mark Twain's Diary of Adam and Eve last night. Any similarities that exist among them are due to the fact that one master craftsman. Okay. This is in a textbook. Time out. Okay. Good. Okay, time out. Due to the fact that one master craftsman fashioned them all. Did I mention that this is actually a textbook for students in taxpayer-funded schools in the state of Texas, Stan? I did? Good. And not that I'm a grammar hooligan or anything, or a spelling dom, or... No. But really, if you're going to teach that creationism is how we got here and that the world was made by the all-seeing, all-knowing, all-doing, all-loving, invisible sky freak, Do you think maybe you should hire a proofreader? Because maybe you didn't hear it in the pronunciation. Let me emphasize that again. Let me emphasize that this time. Any similarities that exist among them are due to the fact that one, capital M, master, craftsmen, with a capital C, men, fashioned them all. One master craftsman. Not one master craftsman. One master craftsman. Who is probably genderless in it. No, he's not! He ain't got a woman! Please, it's a little early for my interior monologue to come running to the forefront. One master craftsman. The right wing has these problems all the time. Jack in Shreveport noting, high school thing. Bob, of course, Accelerated Christian Education, or ACE for short. Por supuesto. Anybody want to translate? Spanish. My Spanish not so good. Master craftsman. Can't make this up. Even if we try. One master craftsman designed them all. And see, this is what happens when you don't pay proofreaders. Because spell check won't catch master craftsman. Man or men, it is correctly spelled, and it is merely a machine. So you wind up putting that out to the general public as master craftsmen. Oh, for pity's sakes. But they have these problems. These evangelicals do. But that's not the end of my... I mean, I've become so frustrated with autocorrect and spell check that I can scarcely express it. I do not, for instance, I do not use... You remember last night when we had the story about Megyn Kelly who wanted people to be able to opt out of saying, "So help me God"? Why can't we opt in to some other traditions? For instance, when I'm typing away and I type Christian, the spell check program assumes that I have made a mistake when I type it with a little C. I also type Islam with a little I, God with a little G, Jesus with a little J. Right? E.E. Cummings would have had a fit with this auto-capitalization business. Why don't we leave it little c so that the people who believe in this baloney can capitalize it at will instead of forcing those of us who don't buy into the foolishness to have to put up with their capitalization as if... Because this is English. We don't capitalize nouns like in German. Yes, we capitalize names. But... Still, please? And you can kind of add to that list, ITS. This is Cranky Friday on the front porch, I guess. Because I know the difference, and it would appear if you look through internet publishing that a lot of people don't, the difference between ITS and IT apostrophe S. IT apostrophe S, of course, being the contraction for it is. ITS being the possessive form of the pronoun it. Try it sometime, especially on any device made by Apple. Type ITS. Leave out the apostrophe. See what you get. Oh, no. No, Steve Jobs' dead freaking hand is going to come up out of his grave, him and his 12-year-old's liver that he got back in Tennessee, and they're going to reach up and they're going to give you an apostrophe. Thanks, Steve. And then one more thing, just because it's fun. Oh, Jack and Shreveport. Master Crafters. Same craftsman who built Noah's Ark, I suppose? The very. Cubits and Chittim wood and all of that stuff. But one more thing. Just before airtime, I received one of those right-wing blast emails that are forever popping in. This one coming from some guy who writes to me constantly, pitching all manner of right-wing teabaggery, to let me know. No, really? Well, here's the pitch. Guest opportunity, Bob Colquhoun. No, really, C-O-L-Q-U-H-O-U-N. I'm assuming that's Colquhoun. Colquhoun? Colquhoun? Smith, nationally known faith-based motivational speaker. How I got on that. But you know what? There's a million of these a day, but some of them are just so damned entertaining. Witness this. The Hollywood, and I read all the way through this just to make sure that I wasn't missing some sort of an inside joke, kind of the way we spell Moran, M-O-R-A-N. No, this is just more teabag typing. Guest opportunity, Bob Colquhoun, nationally known, really? Nationally known faith-based motivational speaker. The Hollywood life is more than all the glitz and glamour. From excessive booze and drug use to violence. Wait. That's a sentence fragment, Brian. Capital F, from excessive booze and drug use to violence. Verb? Predicate? Please? Subject? The way of life chosen, especially for numerous former child stars, is cause for concern. Featured on the 700 Club. I get a million of these a day. I'm just sharing. Bob Colquhoun, Christian. Sounds like a bubble in a bathtub, doesn't it? Bob Colquhoun, Bill Doberman, Christian faith speaker, discusses how Hollywood has created a farce of immoral, careless ways. Well, if it's a farce of immoral, careless ways, then they're not being very immoral or careless, are they? Because it's a farce of it. Bob Colquhoun. Gesundheit. You want a Kleenex? Is available to answer the following questions on the subject. What has happened to many former child stars? How do you think Hollywood is to blame for encouraging reckless behavior? What has happened to Hollywood's Morales? No, really. You would think that right-wing fundamentalist evangelical Christians who are constantly pontificating about morals wouldn't do that. But they did. What has happened to Hollywood's Morales? M-O-R-A-L-E-S. You know, like the president of Bolivia, Evo Morales. Well, that's what's happened to Hollywood's Morales. He became president of Bolivia. Meet Bob Colquhoun, faith-based singer, songwriter, and speaker. Motivational speaker. Four-year speaker youth encounter. I don't want to know about his youth encounter, and I don't want to know about him speaking for 4 years. Ted Cruz doing it for 21 hours was plenty. Featured on the 700 Club. Bob Colquhoun is available for interviews. What has happened to Hollywood's Morales? But that's not the only time they made the mistake, because the entire title of the email pitch in a little blue box is Hollywood Has No Morales, M-O-R-A-L-E-S. It is also the subject line, Hollywood has no Morales. I live for this. Really, I do. I was sitting here plugging away, you know, putting stories in order for Friday on the Front Porch and all the little things that I do in the last half hour before the program. Agnes had brought me a dish of Indian food like Mama used to not make, paneer makhani. It was yummy and spicy and tomatoey. Yes. And I'm sitting here eating it with, like, Pringles. I know, it's bad. No email. Working, 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 eating, working, working, eating, eating, working. And my email goes, bloop. And I've got an email from Brian Henry informing me that Hollywood has no Morales. At which point I look to the universe and said, Mom, Dad, you got this one, right? Because way, way back in the dim and distant past of an absolutely delightful youth, made delightful in large part because my parents were hilarious people who always found an opportunity to have a good giggle. I miss them. My mother and father would have been rendered speechless, breathless even, by the laughter occasioned by things like this on the internet. Hollywood has no Morales. Hollywood has no Morales. What has happened to Hollywood's Morales? I can hear my father now. Margaret! You gotta see this! What, dear? Hollywood has no Morales. And the universe, according to people who believe in monotheism, was designed by master craftsmen. You can't pay to have... The genius staff at either The Daily Show or The Colbert Report, the genius comedians at The Onion, the not-quite-so-genius but still pretty damn funny folks at The Daily Courant, none of them could come up with that. Master craftsmen. Oh, okay. Hey, Texas T in the chat room. I think I know whom thou art. Welcome to the chat room indeed. Free and easy for anybody who does want to pop by. Head on radionetwork.com/chatroom. And since we now know that Hollywood has no Morales, I suppose also no Perez's, but I'm pretty sure Hollywood does have Morales's and Perez's. And Santiago's and all manner of... Yes. But not according to the fundamentalist evangelicals. You know, if I wasn't a kind and tolerant progressive, I would take the last 5 minutes, cut it out, make an MP3 file of it, and mail it off to Brian Henry, who spams my inbox 20 times a day. And there really is, you know, there's a larger point there. There's Brian Henry and about six others. And I probably get 20 emails a day from each of them. And they're all just right-wing blither. About once every 4 days, I'll get a little something from somebody over at The Nation. We are still badly, our side, behind on figuring out how to get our ideas in front of the public. Now, I did not immediately just send to the trash Hollywood has no Morales because I found it incredibly funny. But everything in the Wingnut universe is there. I don't know if you realize it or not, but right-wing radio people hardly have to work at all. It's all there for them. Let's see if I... Are you lost in the wilderness of unemployment? Interview, flying solo, expert tips for business women traveling alone. Let's see. New guest, study says 1 in 7 young adults are failing at life. Isn't that another way of saying dying? That ought to be a hoot. And it goes on and on and on like this. And those are just the ones I missed. So, yeah. Mark noting, spell check, meet Rosetta Stone. Ay, caramba. But there is the larger issue of how we get our stuff. One, there are fewer outlets for our issues. But it also matters that we are not very good at getting the issues out. I don't know how I got on these lists, but I am. And if you were listening when Malloy called in last night, yeah, he gets them every day, too. About 29 minutes before the hour, first half hour of the program, in the can, as they say. And I wanted to run over to something that, since I shared it out, something of his yesterday. Let's keep up with a good thing. A note coming in from Eugene Finnerman, the sharpest, funniest, I think quite possibly most brilliant satirist on the internet. Marking this day, October the 25th, 1415. 1415. On this day in 1415, a beleaguered CEO offered these team-building thoughts to his stakeholders. If you haven't guessed, Eugene doesn't care much for corporate weasel speak. On this day in 1415, a beleaguered CEO offered these team-building thoughts to his stakeholders. We few... We happy few, we band of brothers, for he today that sheds his blood with me shall be my brother. Stirred by such speech, you too might well overlook the fact that your newfound brother makes 300 times more than you and that he's the buffoon who put you in such a desperate plight in the first place. Eugene has a knack for, I think the colloquialism is, taking the piss out of someone. And he does here with Henry V. In fact, Eugene Fitz says, the Battle of Agincourt was decided by French incompetence, not English poetry. Outnumbering the English by approximately 5-1, the French could have used any number of tactics to win the campaign, flanking, envelopment, siege. There was only one possible way that the French could have lost the Battle of Agincourt. That would be a full frontal cavalry assault in constricted terrain, leading to an impassable traffic jam of horses and easy shooting for English archers. Of course, who would be that stupid? Eugene asks. Oh, we. However, he says, I will concede that Henry V could not have made that glorious St. Crispin's Day speech. First, it would have been in Middle English, to which no one ever understood, even people speaking it. Furthermore, the speech, in that form, would never have survived the departmental approval procedure. Before delivering the St. Crispin's speech, Henry, or his speechwriter, was required to submit a draft to the legal department and human resources. In 1415, that editorial inquisition was in the hands of the Lord Chancellor Beaufort and the King's brother, the Duke of Bedford. Maybe it's Beaufort. Beaufort? It's Beaufort in South Carolina. Beaufort, we few, we happy few. I don't know, too many pronouns, too many adjectives. We is too vague a term, too easy to misinterpret. Positive and specific identification is necessary, if only to avoid trademark disputes in future treaties. Few has a negative context, as if the English army were conceding an inadequate number for this campaign. If Henry survives the battle, he would never survive the litigation. Come up with a more positive description of our army's size. Duke of Bedford. And happy? Really? That is unprofessional and inappropriate to a war. If we must have an adjective, let's make it a serious one. And band of brothers, I'm the king's brother, and I have no idea what that means. Is he promising everyone to be a duke like me? Beaufort. Carried away by alliteration, completely irresponsible. There has to be a concise and practical definition of the relationship between the king and his soldiers. Bedford. For he today that sheds his blood with me shall be my brother. Is he criticizing our health care policy? We certainly do cover wounds, at least battle-related ones, and the men will receive appropriate bandages rather than this unsolicited affection. You know, that could actually be viewed as a form of harassment. So, on October 25th, 1415, Henry V assured his beleaguered men, "This adequately numbered English army, this proactive English army, this armed association, for anyone who in this specific time period should acquire a work-related decoagulating condition would be entitled to appropriate coverage from this association." Eugene noting, and if Henry said anything more, no one was listening. Eugene's another one of those people who pays close attention to language. He's worth signing up for. If you've never gone over there, Finnerman Works, FinnermanWorks.com, and subscribe to Your RDA of Irony, you're missing a whale of a good time. And a whole bunch of rock-solid history into the bargain. Yes, indeed. You see what we have to deal with today? The end of the week reality is just simply stunning sometimes. And of course we have some delightful right wingery. Since we were talking about the evangelical textbook, let's enjoy a little something from Cincinnati Stan. No, this isn't a textbook. This is the kind of people who believe that Nessie is really alive and really there and really a pleiad. Really put there by the hand of, yeah. Or as the prophet Bill Hicks, peace upon him, once said, and then I went to live in a land where lots of fat Americans with their money came and made the people there very happy, and there was much rejoicing. So I guess there is a gene, although apparently they don't, based on the content of this story. There's a gene out there called Carrabba's Italian Restaurant. Oh, it's not Cincinnati. It's Overland Park, Kansas. Somehow it makes more sense. It's a chain, Carrabba's Italian Restaurant in Overland Park, Kansas, where a group of people went in to dine. And they were served, as one would expect, a 20-year-old male. He brought them their food. He took their orders. He attended to them. Most appropriately, they paid their check and left. It was after they left, when they began to bust the table, that the 20-year-old young man found the following note. Business of leaving note. This is right-wingers leaving notes edibles in restaurants. Really needs to stop. Thank you for your service. It was excellent. That being said, we cannot in good conscience tip you
for your homosexual lifestyle is an affront to capital G, capital O, capital D, God. Queers do not share in the wealth of capital G, capital O, capital D, God, and you will not share in ours. We hope you will see the tip your queer choices made you lose out on and plan accordingly. It is never too late for capital G, capital O, capital D, apostrophe, little s, love, but none shall be spared for queers. May G-O-D, capitals all, have mercy on you.
Would it be cruel and or unusual for me to suggest that this gang of diners be taken out and horsewhipped? May I simply ask the question, how did they know he was gay? Because I'm guessing if you work for corporate there at Carrabba's Italian Grill, they don't let you come to work with your "We're here, we're queer, get over it" t-shirt on. Or have you hugged a gay guy today? Or maybe a t-shirt that says, "Hi, I'm Jim Bob, I'm gay. May I take your order, please?" Queers do not share in the wealth of G-O-D, and you will not share in ours. In a way, you wish this was some sort of joke. That you wish this was parody. You wish this just wasn't real. But we have nothing to suggest that. This is not from the Daily Courant, the Onion, or anybody else. This is just another day in Kansas, Stan. And what the hell does that mean? We hope you will see the tip your queer choices made you lose out on and plan accordingly. Oh, see, they're working that whole it's a choice thing in, because that table full of weirdo heterosexuals all made a choice to be straight. Not. God, that's infuriating. So it turns out that, and this is always what matters for corporate, like, you know, the folks at the home office of Carrabba's Italian Grill, it turns out that this evening, probably even now, friends and supportive customers are filing into Carrabba's Italian Grill to have dinner there as they pull out various and sundry frozen entrees and pop them into the microwaves or plop them into the skillet for a quick reheat. It is, after all, corporate chain food. It is a mark of the decency of some human beings that people have been trying to find out who he is, and we want to give him money just to make up for the nasty Christians. To his credit, he's saying, "No, thank you. I'd prefer to let my work ethic and my service do the talking and nothing else." But just the same, lots and lots of people are going to Carrabba's Italian Grill and giving them lots of business to make up, and hopefully lots and lots of 20% tips to make up for the weirdo Christians. Are there any preachers, priests, ministers, what have you, out there that see stories like this and do a facepalm? at the number of people that are pushed away and I say lucky for them from any sort of faith and any sort of invisible friends because of the conduct of upstanding, God-fearing, heaven-bound Christians like this. Thank you for your service. It was excellent. So, see, they're living their faith. So even though the service was excellent, and even though there's actually a parable by Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian semi-literate day laborer, itinerant rabbi, on exactly this topic, well, their preacher has told them that the homos don't get to go to heaven because they do not participate in God's blessing, even though their God allegedly created them. See? Yeah. In the chat room, Richard says, "I'm a liberal Texan. Facepalm is a way of life for me." Oh, no, Richard. I'm sure that there's a gay Jim Bob out there somewhere. I mean, really. Sorry about the buffering there. I guess the audio was getting a little squirrely on the White Rose side. My apologies. But this is just another magnificent day in our Christian nation. And let's go ahead and work this one in, too. We've done clips from Cindy Jacobs before. But this one, as they say, is a real Lulu.
One day he came in from playing. He was six. And he felt miserable.
Now, she's not talking about little baby Jesus. She's talking about her kid.
One day he came in from playing. He was six. And he felt miserable. And rather than just saying something was naturally wrong with him, I said, "Daniel, do you have a concern we need to pray about?" And he said, "Yes, Mom."
At six. "Do you have a concern we need to pray out?" "Yes, Mother."
Oh, there's a couple of top flight bumpers just that are just presenting themselves to me for this. "A concern we need to pray on." "No, Mommy, my stomach hurts." Well, let's find out what happened when they prayed over Daniel's concern.
He said, "Could a president be killed?" And at that time,
I didn't want to call the Secret Service because I thought it was a little too early for my six-year-old to be thinking about killing presidents, but no, that's not.
Was, you know, there was a, you know, of course it was possible. I said, "Yes, that's called assassination." And we prayed. And we said, "God, would you avert an assassination attempt on our president?"
Did you catch that little sister with the S's? You think she's been as a cooking sherry before the light went on the camera? So they immediately prayed for keep a bad president from getting assassinated, okay?
And as he prayed and we prayed together, all of a sudden, I said, "How do you feel now?" He said, "I feel light. I'm happy." And the six-year-old went...
Uh-oh. He feels light and happy at the tender age of six. Next thing you know, he'll be waiting tables at Carrabba's Italian Grill and getting stiffed by the Christians, and I don't mean in a good way.
Out the door and became just a six-year-old. But a moment before, God had called my child in intercessory prayer. Later on, we found out behind the scenes that there had been an assassination attempt on the president. It wasn't widely publicized.
Cindy Jacobs, 6-year-old, saved St. Ronnie. Cindy Jacobs, 6-year-old little boy, prayed the bullet away from the extra bullet, away from St. Ronnie, and moved it just a couple of centimeters over so that it wouldn't kill St. Ronnie, and he moved that other bullet, wham, right into the spine of James Brady. Her God is a God of love. You can't make this stuff up. You really just can't. Just can't. So let's take a break. I have chosen from many possible. But no, this just works for me. It's Friday on the front porch. Always a good time for a little Grateful Dead. This is Conversation Radio. Friday on the front porch. I'm Bob Kincaid.
First thing I remember knowing was a lonesome whistle blow and a young stream of growing up to ride. On a freight train leaving town, not knowing where I found, no one changed mine but Mama cried. One and only rebel child from a family big and mild, Mama seemed to know what lay in store. In spite of all my Sunday learning, for the bad I kept on turning.
Getting notes from the purists saying, no, not the dead version. Play the... Right. But, no, that's fine. That's fine. From The Skull with Roses. Skull with Roses, live album, 1971. The Dead. Mama Tried. Richard in the chat room. Anything good planned for supper, Bob? Well, no. Like I said, had the pre-show snack of Paneer Makhani and a few Pringles. And, no, nothing really out there. But I think Agnes is fixing Italian sausages with peppers and onions on for the rest of the family. But I'm out in the rain on that one. You know, I told you while I was in Texas last month, a month and a half ago, my hosts there kindly took me down to a little town called Belton, Texas, where at a place called Miller's Deer Processing and Barbecue, I had some of the best brisket I have ever eaten in my life. It was delicious. And mercy the pie. Mama Miller made the pies herself. Everything was made on the place. It was delicious. And little moments like that, when you've got that point of contact, that contextual point, you read a story and you go, oh, I've been there. Or at least I do. Country mouse that I am. Beth just sent this in via Progress, Texas. The hissy fit that's been, apparently, the Affordable Care Act website was a veritable bonanza for the usual cast of characters of suckers at the federal teat, those hogs who like to get their front feet and their rear trotters in the trough, supping at, you know, our money. And you know that the right wing have been having an absolute purple polka dotted hissy, kittens with crocheted tails even, over the problems with the Affordable Care Act website. They even had some bullshit hearing, what was it, yesterday, in which Frank Pallone from New Jersey became so frustrated he referred to the Republicans as a monkey court. Yeah. I'm glad we took it easy on the kangaroos this time. Thanks, Frank. Well, it turns out that somebody else had a hand in, indirectly, albeit, in screwing up the Affordable Care Act website. Anybody? Yeah. Texas Governor Rick Goodhair, bless you, Molly Ivins, peace be upon you. She's a prophet, too, you know. Perry. Progress, Texas, reporting, a year after Obamacare's birth, a fierce critic of the program inadvertently helped sabotage it by awarding $1.8 million in Texas taxpayer funds to subsidize Montreal-based CGI Group. This technology firm, incubated by Governor Perry, was the lead contractor producing the bug-infested software that crippled Obamacare's rollout. When Governor Perry went to Belton, Texas, see, in 2011 to announce a $1.7 million Texas Enterprise Fund grant to CGI, he spoke blandly of yet another handout of corporate welfare. This TEF investment in CGI will create 350 jobs and millions in capital investment. That's according to the press release the Perry administration put out when the taxpayer goodies were handed out. So it's nice for me to at least know that somebody in Belton, Texas, can get something done right. Hi, folks at Miller's Deer Processing and Barbecue place. You got really cold beer. You got wonderful pie. The brisket is not to be believed. The ribs are magnificent. And that jalapeno cheddar sausage you do is mind-bending. I guess they're not quite as competent as you guys are with barbecue over at CGI somewhere around the corner there in Belton. Keep up the good work, guys, at Miller's. Really, it's delicious. Oh, thanks, Sal. Sal put us a little closer to actually meeting the evening fundraising goal. $10 away now, thanks to Sal and to Don and to Diane. Thank you very much. But you get, there's always more to the story than whatever they're prattling on about inside the Republican House of Representatives, isn't there? Now that we know that she is on her way out, we have to keep an eye out for the next replacement, or the replacement for 1L Michelle Bachmann. I'd say that in the last couple of weeks, Marsha Blackburn of Tennessee has gone a long way toward pretty much making herself queen of stupid by acclamation. I wish I could understand, and for the life of me, I cannot. I wish I could understand why it is that the voters in that district in Tennessee continue to send this unmitigated idiot to Washington, D.C. But one way or another, there's no getting around the fact that she don't like her some Obamacare. Kenyan Muslim socialist health care, you know.
Joining us now is Republican Congresswoman Marsha Blackburn of Tennessee. She's also the vice chairwoman of the House Energy and Commerce Committee, which...
You might recall she was the one who, in speaking to the guy on MSNBC the other day, kept saying, "Goodness!"
held yesterday's hearing. Good morning, Congresswoman.
Good morning, Carol. Thank you.
Goodness.
Thanks so much for joining me.
Sure.
CNN has looked into the medical privacy question and found the website does not violate HIPAA. In fact, the only health-related question is, do you smoke? So what specifically were you referring to on the website that violated, that could possibly violate HIPAA?
Because, you see, there was this complete hissy that she had in the committee hearing about how all our privacies are going to be turned over to the Kenyan Muslim socialists. Goodness! This should be fun.
We are concerned about privacy overall, data security, privacy, and, of course, applying and complying.
Come on, Carol Costello. When she says we're worried about data security, you have every right in the world to say, "Excuse me, Snowden!" you can do that, Carol.
With the HIPAA laws. And let's
ask that would concern you about HIPAA? What medical question does it ask?
Carol, HIPAA requires you to, it's the way you structure your website and the way you transit the information.
I like radishes on my word salad, I'm just saying.
The transfer rights that are there. And when you look at privacy on these websites, what you have to do is keep all of the application information in one server, and then you have, whether it is a physical server or a cloud server, and then you also have to make certain that you have the patient data information in another. You have to be certain that any of the information concerning disease or condition or pertinent to the individual is separate. All of our hospitals, all of our physicians, and our insurance
disease or health condition. The only health-related question asked is, do you smoke? HIPAA has to do with medical records, right? But you're not asked to provide any medical records.
Okay, let's find out what the HIPAA has to do with.
It also has to do with the way you transit all of this information and what we want to do.
The way you transit the information? This is a verb? To transit? I mean, I know some civil engineers and folks like that, and they use transits. But even people doing survey work don't say we're going to transit your plot of ground. To transit? Yeesh.
Do is to make certain that each of these agencies, it is important enough that each of the contractors said they had been through some HIPAA training. What we wanted to do in the interest...
Was it Kenyan Muslim Socialist HIPAA training?
Of privacy of our constituents is make certain as they build this data hub that will contain your medical as well as your financial information.
just says that. The data hub will contain, and I guess if you're a Repiglican, you get to do that. You just get to say wildly outrageous, crazy, not factual shit, and Benghazi. IRS. Kenyan Muslim birth certificate. Right.
And as this is shared with the different agencies, with the insurance companies that are going to be a part of
healthcare. Specifically, what medical information does the website ask for? And specifically, what private information that the government doesn't already have does the website ask for?
Because, see, that's what they were saying yesterday. The evil Kenyan Muslim socialist, bad website was gonna find out about, you know, that thing you've got in your that causes you to it's all right there for the death panels.
What we want to make certain is the individual has a right to privacy, and as you
I think that horse is out of the barn and long gone, Marcia, oh my nose. See, Snowden, Edward.
You heard in what was revealed yesterday in the privacy notice that is down in the coding, an individual is not given that right to privacy. So not only are we looking at HIPAA, we are looking at privacy. We are looking at how the companies handle this information.
At this point, Marcia, I think you're looking at the Paisley skies and the breathing walls. Because I think flashbacks are hell.
Serco said they had 2,000 individuals that are entering this information.
What kind of information are you talking about? What specifically does the website ask that I might be afraid might be shared with whomever? Like, specifically, what information?
You should be very concerned. Not only as you navigate the website, but as you make a purchase, and then as your information is handled, what we want to make certain is that an individual's medical information, their financial information, is all going to be kept in a private manner. What people...
You know, a private manner where the NSA can't go trolling for it on a lark, which they do, with the help of the same folks who helped build this website, Booz Allen Hamilton. See how it works? Charming. Hey, Agent Fred, enjoy your weekend, buddy. Don't take the Mountaineers and the points, Fred. I'm just saying.
Do not want is a peeping Tom that is going...
Oh, no, she... A Kenyan Muslim socialist peeping Tom, no doubt. A peeping Tom? How about a peeping NSA? Let's go back. I want to hear about this peeping Tom.
Burned. Not only as you navigate the website, but as you make a purchase, and then as your information is handled, what we want to make certain is that an individual's medical information, their financial information, is all going to be kept in a private manner. What people do not want is a peeping Tom that is going to look through their private or any of their PII, their personally identifying information. They want to make certain that the federal government has standards and are applying and abiding by the privacy laws that are on the books. And
hence HIPAA. But that's rational and logical, and the intersection of rational and logical is a part of the neighborhood Marcia Blackburn never visits.
By the HIPAA regulations that every hospital and every doctor abide by. So this is a serious investigation looking at the entire rollout and launch of this website, how this data is being used. You know, Carol,
I understand your concern about hacking into the site, because that is a real concern, because it's not working
and
right now.
Yeah, throw her a bone, Carol. Why not?
identifying information
but as far
is
as specific
of concern.
Specific information, I'm just not clear on what the website asks you that would violate HIPAA.
As individuals navigate the website, as they work through finding a product, as they make a purchase, as they have their information that is going to, as it's going to be data mined, if you will, what?
I don't think Carol will be data mining, Marcia.
Jesus. Texas Betsy with an astute observation. So then get Medicare for all and bypass the for-profit hospitals and for-profit insurance companies. Bang, problem solved. No, because then we just become a nation of Kenyan Muslim socialists.
You have to make certain is that information is separated from patients and individuals and that it is going to be anonymized and that individuals have...
Anonymized. What a lovely concept. Didn't we have a story sometime not too far in the distant past about the fact that the NSA had bragged about the fact that they had busted through all of the anonymization protocols and procedures so that they could read just about any damn thing they wanted to, not the least of which might be that thing that does the thing with your thing in the middle of the... Right, yeah.
Have an expectation and a right of privacy that the federal government is going to abide by.
The federal government does not abide by expectations of privacy. We learned that, Marcia, and of course you probably didn't notice this because you weren't paying attention at the time. You were too busy shaking your little bottle blonde head back and forth saying, USA, USA, bomb Afghanistan, bomb Iraq today. You were too busy with that to notice that the Bush administration set fire to any notion of individual privacy back somewhere between 2001 and 2009. But I digress.
That. Now, when you have a company that is utilizing as many as 80 or 100 different servers, whether they're physical or they're cloud servers, you have to make certain that the encryption is there, that individuals who are setting up accounts.
This woman couldn't set up her own Gmail account, okay? And we know this because she's already...
It could be the cloud. It could be the cloud. I said cloud twice. I know about these computer thingy boxes. Goodness.
Honest to Pete. This woman couldn't navigate an auction on eBay.
What, I have to send my shoes to somebody now? Goodness!
Have set passwords, that those passwords are being changed within every 90 days. All of this is HIPAA healthcare compliance.
Okay.
And it is the customer's expectation of that privacy. If these individuals are not engineering those websites with these protections, with these encryptions, if they are not making certain that people do not have physical access to those websites and the information held in them, then they're not going to be compliant with federal law.
Okay.
And we want to make certain that they are going to be compliant.
I do. I understand. The only health-related question this website asks is, do you smoke? But I hear what you're saying.
I think there are other questions that are there. There are other questions that are there. And so we're going to continue.
Congressman Blackburn.
Not health-related. Why did we book this woman in the first place? Not health-related. Not very intelligent. Word salad. Repiglic and teabagger. We're going to have a meeting with the production staff real soon. Maybe fire the booking agent. I hate having these little on-the-fly ideas. Blackburn, let's see, what would that be? Blackburn yakking on the TV box. No, I don't sing well. But with a few interspersed clips of Marcia word-salading and a parody lyric based on the eponymous
Beatles ditty Blackbird. Blackburn yakking on the TV box. And box rhymes with fox. Oh, if I get a moment, maybe I'll jump on that. There's some real potential there. She does make your head hurt, though, doesn't she? I've got an instrumental version. Wait, is this... Wait. Almost sounds like Chappy Klingenschmidt's background music from a couple of nights ago, doesn't it? No, that's a little too cool jazz for a Friday night on the front porch, I think. We'll take a powder on that. See, you guys are already working on it in the chat room. Jack from Shreveport with Blackburn babbling in the dead of night. Danny with a note. And thank you, Danny, for the kind contribution. Danny writes, "Damn, I have always hated that woman. Medicare gets old people's medical info." As I grow older, let's be a little careful with how we throw around that old people line, Danny. Just saying. Damn, I've always hated that woman. Medicare gets old people's medical info every minute. Why isn't she screaming about Medicare, the VA, or military-operated hospitals like the ones I used as a kid? Because my dad was in the Air Force. Stupid. And she is. Lord God, she is. Hard to avoid. Oh, and you know, what was it? Was it just last night that we had Chappy Gordon Klingenschmidt warning us that gay people wanted to come in, they would demand to come into our homes and have sex in our homes, and if we didn't let them have sex in our homes, that they would then throw us out on the streets while they continued to have sex in our homes? Yeah, that was last night, wasn't it? Remember Star Parker, whom you hated so much from the Values Voter Summit? She's back. With a vengeance. Oh, you're going to love Star. And you know, you can tell a lot about people by the people they hang around with. Star Parker, in this case, hanging out with a walking porn stash by the name of Joseph Farah. He's a birther, and a deather, and a tenther, and a booger eater, and he runs that website called Wingnut Daily, I think, something like that. And all of these people now have video casting capabilities, which is a treasure trove for people like me. And building on this notion that Chappy had for us yesterday, that the homos are going to demand to have sex in our homes, well, pick it up and run with it, Star Parker.
It's enough to make you think it's a political strategy, doesn't it?
It is absolutely a political strategy, but it goes beyond politics, because when you talk about trust and being able to trust, you want to know that you're received, and it's hurting us, and it will hurt us very deeply if we continue. So my point about the youth.
What will? Maybe that's just a clipping problem. Just an edit, maybe. Oh, well.
It's enough to make you think it's a political strategy, doesn't it?
It is absolutely a political strategy, but it goes beyond politics, because when you talk about trust and being able to trust, you want to know that you're received, and it's hurting us, and it will hurt us very deeply if we continue. So my point about the youth, because if they begin to distrust each other, then what we're going to see is more division. We're going to start seeing ourselves separated and segregated again, not just when it comes to ethnicity, but also when it comes to our religion. I mean, what this president has done to damage the Christian community to where...
What? I mean, anybody. Got need a little help here. It is Friday on the front porch, you know, 304-658-3333. On Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn. What this president has done to damage the Christian community. Anybody want to take that one and run with it? Apparently he damaged the Christian community when it turned out that he sat in the pews and listened to sermons by Jeremiah Wright, even though at the same time he was secretly a Muslim. This is not to defend Barack Obama hour, of course. But can we have some fact-based criticism? I mean, we can do fact-based criticism of President Not Sure all day long, because there's plenty to be critical about. NSA. Drones. The Affordable Care Act. It really would have been nice to have some public option. There's stuff. But the damage that he has done to the Christian community? Excuse me? Well, I mean, yeah, I was downtown earlier today. Saw that sign in front of the First United Methodist Church and the sign in front of the First Baptist Church and the sign in front of the Second Pentecostal Holiness Tabernacle. Closed by order of Barack Obama, Kenyan anti-colonialist Muslim socialist. Only there weren't any. They're open, generally speaking, they're open Wednesdays and Sundays. Every one of them. Sometimes Saturdays. Some churches you can just walk in any day of the week. The damage done to the Christian community.
Segregated again, not just when it comes to ethnicity, but also when it comes to our religion. I mean, what this president has done to damage the Christian community to where, and the laws that are coming out of states like California and others, you know, it was California just with this boy growing in the girl's bathroom.
Really? The potty? Again? I mean, boys going in the girl's bathroom. Why doesn't she say girls going in the boys' bathroom? That's what they got. Barack Obama is forcing 6-year-old boys to use the girls' restroom at school. And that is damaging the Christian community. Because they worship a God that's all-powerful, created the universe, and is rendered helpless and harmless by a 6-year-old transgendered child using the potty differently than the Christians think the child should.
But the laws of pushing homosexuality out into society.
Huh. At least we're getting more substance from, well, it's not substance. At least we're getting better hallucinations from Star Parker than we did from Marsha Blackburn. The laws of pushing homosexuals out into society. You mean like waiting tables at Carrabba's Italian Diner? Where they're stiffed by the Christians? Even though they haven't told anybody they're gay? I'm still bothered by that. Is that something you get with baptism, the immediate ability to determine who is and isn't having sex the way you want them to? Is that one of those? Because I mean, speaking in tongues, translating the speaking in tongues, prophesying, laying hands upon the sick, that's all there in the gifts of the Holy Spirit there in the book of Acts and everything, but I didn't see Gadar listed. Pushing these homosexuals out in the community? Just out there spreading their gay around?
When you have this type of vileness exalted.
Vileness? Gay is vile now? Well, of course it is. Yeah, interesting observation in the chat room from Texas T. I thought the youth counselors raping the children at Jesus Camp were the ones harming the Christian community. A note coming in from our buddy the Angry Indian via Skype. Uncle Tom alert! They, the GOP, are pulling out every sellout to the African community in the U.S. willing to speak in front of a microphone they can find. Anybody who is a person of color keen to make their climb up the social ladder by insulting the first black man in that office, racially denouncing him via a brown-skinned proxy is a ruse deflecting from the real source of animosity. Ben Carson, E.W. Jackson, and the rest know what their job is. To deflect racialized criticism away from the rank and file of the GOP by using issues that the far right assumes will divide the black electorate along cultural lines. In the chat room, Lottie noting, I'll have to watch Queer as Folk all over again and look for the vileness this time. Is there a vileness wrangler? Back to Star Parker.
The wicked go on prowl. That's what the proverb.
Oh, wait, she's Bible quoting. Oh, and she's not even quoting her own testament. She's quoting from the part that doesn't. Oh, well.
Boy, growing in the girl's bathroom. But the laws of pushing homosexuality out into society, when you have this type of vileness exalted, the wicked go on prowl. That's what the proverb says. So in that the wicked can now go on prowl, people of resources, they pull away. And so they...
Okay, it took me a minute. The wicked go on prowl. Because that's what Proverbs says. Which is probably not anything even related to homosexuality. Texas Betsy noting, I'm not even having sex the way I want me to. I may not have been supposed to share that. But that's right along the lines of, you know, it's been so long I've forgotten who gets tied up. The wicked go on prowl? All right, we're going to have to take a minute here. The wicked go on prowl, KJV, because I like the King James Version. Oh, I'm sorry, Star Parker. You got your reference wrong, sister. That's not Proverbs. That's from Psalms. Psalm 12 Let's see if we can, just for the sake of context, let's find out what all of Psalm 12 says. KJV, because I like it. Help, Lord, for the godly man ceaseth, for the faithful flail. No, they don't. That's me not being. Help, Lord, for the godly man ceaseth. Ceaseth. And they're worried about. Never mind. Help, Lord, for the godly man ceaseth, for the faithful fail from among the children of men, and she sells seashells by the seashore. No, I added that. Help, Lord, for the godly man ceaseth, for the faithful fail from among the children of men. They speak vanity, every one with his neighbor, with flattering lips and with a double heart do they speak. The Lord shall cut off all flattering lips. That's going to hurt. And the tongue that speaketh proud things. I don't think he's talking about a piercing there. Who have said, with our tongue will we prevail. Our lips are our own. Who is Lord over us? I'm thinking Star Parker's projecting a little bit here with all this talk about lips and tongues. For the oppression of the poor, for the sighing of the needy, now will I arise, saith the Lord. I will set him in safety from him that puffeth at him. You know, if a fellow was taking this claptrap seriously, you might say that there was something in there for the Star Parkers of the world. The people who support things like, oh, I don't know, cutting billions and billions of dollars out of the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. For the oppression of the poor, for the sighing of the needy, now will I arise, that's God talking, saith the Lord, I will set him in safety from him that puffeth at him. And what have the Repiglicans done except puffeting at the poor? The words of the Lord are pure words, as silver tried in a furnace of earth, purified seven times. Thou shalt keep them, O Lord, thou shalt preserve them from this generation forever. The wicked walk on every side when the vilest men are exalted. That's where that prowling wickedness comes from, Psalm 12, which is actually a psalm about not shitting on poor people. Which is actually a psalm about the people who glorify what would have been in those ancient times what passed for celebrity culture. You know, people who got to bathe twice a year instead of just one or something like that. Or people who had two wheelbarrows instead of none. Out there prattling on and on about, hast thou seen my new wheelbarrow? Verily hath I a fantabulous wheelbarrow that is studded in bling. That's what that's about. Nothing in there about gay people. I mean, there's weird shit in the Old Testament about gay people. About stoning people outside the city gates. I mean, can you imagine what it would be like if you were gay and were eating shrimp in a robe made of Dacron polyester blend? They can only stone you once, right? Well, blessed. Okay. Irish Dave noting, oh, sure, the wicked walk the vile walk, but do they talk the talk in tongues? Juanita asking, Bob, please remind the Horn family commune that Parker wrote a book that scandalized the African-American community called Pimps, Whores, and Welfare Brats. The introduction to the book, Juanita notes, was written by Rush Limbaugh. Noted African-American commentator. No, I'm not even going to. I can't. Okay, so now that we know what it means about the prowl, the prowling going on, and it doesn't mean some right-wing blatherhead blonde crawling on the floor of a gay disco after Matt Drudge. That's a real story, by the way. Let's get back to Star.
When you have this type of vileness exalted, the wicked go on prowl. That's what the proverb says. So in that the wicked can now go on prowl, people of resources, they pull away, and so they become much more private. So while you have ill activity now in the public square, you have those decent people in quiet communities becoming much more, refined. And
what does that mean? Prowling wickedness, people in private gated communities are becoming that much more refined. What? More fundamentalist Christians or evangelicals are figuring out what to do with the shrimp fork?
More closed, and that's not healthy for us as a society, because when you go start walking out in a public square and nobody talks to each other, that's what they do in Europe.
In Europe? Walking out in the public square and not talking to each other. That's how they are in Europe. May I call a quick timeout? Timeout, okay, Jack? Okay? Good. I noticed lots of people talking to each other in Europe. I saw it in I saw it in Paris. Not that I'm any kind. I mean, it was just, you know, hell. It wasn't even 12 hours in Paris, but there was probably a din of people talking to each other that reached space from Paris alone. Because the Parisians are kind of talky people. And even the more reticent, taciturn Germans were constantly talking in the streets to each other. The little village of Sassenberg where I was, I couldn't walk down the street in the morning without getting a half a dozen Guten Morgens. I got helloed more in Europe than I would in New York or Chicago. That's how it is in Europe. People, they're closed off and they don't talk to each other. I don't know what it's like in the green room there at Wingnut Daily. Apparently, absinthe?
More. Refined and more closed, and that's not healthy for us as a society, because when you go start walking out in a public square and nobody talks to each other, that's what they do in Europe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but the thing is, the problem with the public square talking we're doing here has to do with people who think that Star Parker is a real intellectual out there babbling about Kenyan Muslim socialists or how Obama is the Antichrist. Is that what she means? That nobody's is she subtextually complaining that nobody's listening to the teabaggers and the wingnuts and the evangelicals anymore? That we just kind of dismiss them and laugh and go on? Could that be it?
Just a bunch of zombies. Mm. And
wait, what? We're going to have to get this thing contextualized.
You know, refined and more closed, and that's not healthy for us as a society, because when you go start walking out in a public square and nobody talks to each other, that's what they do in Europe. Mm-hmm. They're just a bunch of zombies. Mm. And
Euro zombies? And the guy and the walking porn stash is sitting across from him, like a Euro zombie. Fire bad. So Europeans are closed off, non-speaking, homosexual zombies because of gay. Man, this is platinum plated and zircon encrusted weirdness.
We don't want that as Americans, I wouldn't think. I think that one of the helps that has come from our the way that our founding documents are designed is that we get to debate. We get to connect with each other's lives. Right now we're not connecting.
Okay. That is what it is. She's complaining that nobody will take her and the rest of her weirdo friends seriously. We get to debate. It says so right there in the Declaration of Independence. We get to debate. And we also get to win because, you know, Jesus. Goodness.
It was, I think Psalms 12 would be good for her. Because there's not just a heck of a lot about the homos in there. European Horn family listeners, does this piss you off? To hear that, it's one thing to be ignorant. It is another thing entirely to celebrate one's ignorance. They're not talking to each other in Europe. Well, you know, I mean, there's an upside. I never drink without a reason. Star Parker just gave me one. Lines are open, 304-658-3333. Ostensibly Friday on the front porch, although we kind of did that last night, and folks may not have been ready for it this evening. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. This is Lou in Phoenix, Arizona.
Well, hi, Lou.
Hi.
How you doing?
Okay. I'm doing great. I don't know if I'm going to be mentioning anything new, but you were talking earlier about, I believe, was it transgenders trying to use a different bathroom?
Yeah, the evangelicals are just absolutely fascinated with that, Lou. They've got a potty fixation.
Right. The same phenomena happened here in Phoenix last year, and it was headed off by just exactly like what you said, evangelical organization. There's an organization here, an evangelical organization here in Phoenix called Center for Arizona Policy, and it's run by a woman by the name of Kathy Herod. And it's
really? Herod? You can't make Herod. That up. That's beautiful. Go ahead. Lou? Oh, Lou. Well, shoot. Are you there? Oh. Well, maybe we'll get Lou back. Kathy Herod headed up for the Center for Arizona Policy. That's special. Come on back, Lou. You're more than welcome. I don't know what happened there. Irish Dave noting, you know, those Euro zombies don't even open carry. Well, that's because they just eat your brains, Dave. And they don't shout, Wolverines! Lord. Well, yeah, I think I got to run this. Thank you, Jack. I'm a snake tooting fool. Early Kyler is my hero. Thank you, Jack. I think that's going to be added to the prayer meeting Wednesday rotation. Psychotic is noting, Bob Kincaid, in most of Europe, all bathrooms are mixed. There's an argument to be made for bathroom fixtures to be apparatus-dependent. Women using urinals is universally accepted to be, at best, silly. But the rooms themselves? See, that's where we are, Psychoticus. They're having a the hissy is over gender definition and their right to declare what is and isn't acceptable gender definition. Oh, my aching back. Psychoticus notes, I see it at events all the time when the women's line gets too long, a bunch walk over, take over the men's for a spell until the line gets short, and then they return it. Yeah, and has God visited a firestorm of lava rich? Never mind. Yeah, because he turned the homo euro zombies loose on him for using the wrong potty. Psychotica is also noting, ye old wisdom, women's restrooms are designed by men. Men's urinals are designed by women. Right. Back to the phones. Hey, Lou, if you want to jump back in, please do. I don't know why we got cut off. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, how are you doing, man?
I have no idea.
Yeah, I thought you were taking off tonight.
Well, I did too, but it turned out, Bill, that...
They changed it.
No. It was a matter of a bad tire.
Oh, for Christ's sake, yeah.
And no tire to replace it within 20 miles of me. We can get one for you. We can have one for you Monday.
Oh, brother. What the hell's going on? When a guy... Man, when you can't find a used tire, this country's really taking the...
245/60R18.
Wow, that you threw me with that. I mean, yeah. Well, I'm used to, you know.
I mean, I guess it's a fairly large. I mean, it's a fairly large tire, but still, you know.
Still, I was running 15, or was it even? I was running 6 lug tires on a truck I picked up that came up from Phoenix, and man, I put a camper on that thing and. Brother, I had it made for a musician. I mean, you couldn't... Nothing like carrying your own dressing room.
No.
I was just, you know... Peace on earth, man. Come out and... it's snowing bad? Well, I'll sleep till the morning. And, you know... Hey. That was... I wondered... It sounded like you were running live, you know? And I said, wait a minute now. Am I... Maybe I'm starting to lose it, Bob. I don't know what the hell day it is.
No, I apologize, Bill. I tweet it and Facebook it and stuff, but there are some folks that I just can't.
Yeah, well, you can't reach everybody, and I didn't check the email anyway. I don't look at it that much. I just, you know. That was no wonder this stuff sounded like I had never heard it before.
Except you have. It's just different translation, I guess.
Well, yeah, the name's changed, but the idiocy from the opposition remains the same, you know. You just have to substitute names for the idiots. The name's changed, but what the stupidity that comes out of their mouth stays the same.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, they make it easy on you, Bob. I mean, some of these people are walking jokes. They just set themselves up.
And some of them are walking threats.
Oh, well, that's... I try not to think about that, but they are. They threaten everything that we have believed in. Well, not everything we have believed in for a long... I mean, but, you know, the stuff I learned when I was a kid is just... You throw it out the window, you know?
Turn your back and walk away, Renee, as fast as you possibly can.
Yeah, it's nuts. I had a interesting day. I had breakfast with my friend whose dad was a German submariner, and that's always a pleasure to get together with people, you know.
You've got a core of really good people around you, Bill.
Yeah, a lot of musicians. The people that got in the business in the last 10, 15 years. Well, they know my feelings are that, you know, well, we were much more sorely tested in the mid-60s when you were playing this stuff. You had to go out and really, you know, do a job to sell it. A friend of mine just sent me a live Butterfield CD recorded live in, I think, Boston. And it was the first band, Michael Bloomfield and Company, and it was good to hear, although they were... Not that on that night, you know. That's like everybody else, you know. But I'm sorry to hear that because now because I know you wanted to go. This was family, and family's an important situation. You know, that's just
yeah.
The way it is.
Well, I did, but I mean, some things There's not a damn thing to be done about it.
I'll tell you, last night was an interesting night. What's the young lady from Columbus? What's her first name?
Oh, Juanita.
Yeah, that brought up so much of what I had seen. You know, it's a funny thing to have walked through so much in the 60s and 70s when this stuff began to hit the, you know, hit the whole area, all these different changes, because they're not radical to me. They're not new. They're things that I've heard before and dealt with before and dealt with people before. But, yeah, tonight, where do you find these air shots? Where do you find this off-air stuff, man? That's amazing.
Well, it's no secret, Bill. One of my favorite trolling grounds is rightwingwatch.org.
Yeah.
I don't even begin to understand what kind of infrastructure it must take just to catch all this crazy crap. And I have a hero's reverence for anybody who sits there watching this stuff, just, you know, with their, because it feels like it's going to make my ears bleed.
Yeah, well, I turned the show on late tonight. It was just to see what rerun it was going to be, you know, because most of them are still good on the second time around.
Well, that's mighty nice of you to say.
Well, it refreshes the mind. Last night really had me thinking because of friends of mine, female friends of mine, who were a little older than me and who were in on so many of the early stages of legal situations, you know, because the whole thing has changed so much. And to learn to live with all these changes when you're an old person is amazing to me that it still happens. But I just don't know what you know, which way we're going here, and what the future beholds. I know you've got children, and that makes a big difference when you've got, well, I got some grandkids, but yeah, you know, I don't see much of them. So in fact, that's something that sociologically I've noticed in this country is after World War II and after the 60s, people just started going, people started moving all over the country. And families are, you know, because heck, you're isolated from some of your family, aren't you?
Oh, yes. I have two siblings remaining. One speaks to me, the other one doesn't.
Oh, boy. Well, how far were you going today to the...
About 6 hours.
That's a long way in that area.
Well, it is. I mean, we would have gotten out of the mountains in fairly, well, probably about 3 hours. But the idea, I mean, when I saw the tire, no.
Yeah, I've been through that over the years. The camp.
Well, there's just something off-putting about seeing steel belts poking out of the rubber.
Yeah, and they're hard to. Well, I got to a point with cars when the van was doing well. I didn't have any trouble with getting most everything. I had a big 5-horse 30-gallon tank compressor and all the goodies that you ran off of it, you know. And that made a big difference to me. The whole mechanical thing became, and I stuck with the stuff that was, I tried to keep the older stuff, and for that we had to go down south to do that. Because these things today, I don't know what the hell a lot of folks are going to do when you can't work on the stuff yourself anymore. You know, what are you going to do? Pay and pay and pay, I suppose.
Right. And that was not. I mean, the sticking point was the unavailability of the tire.
Yeah. Well, that's so surprising because that vehicle is not that new, is it?
It's what 4 years old.
Well. You should be, because used
tires. No, it's just a tire. Well, it's like I was talking to somebody else off air today, and was informed that a couple of years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, when Chrysler put out the Chrysler 600 or 300,
yeah,
there was only one manufacturer for the tires.
Oh, for gosh sakes!
And so, you know, you got a Hobson's choice in tire purchasing.
Oh boy!
And I've come to expect it around here that you know, you look at the guy and he says, "Well, you know, I can have you a couple of tires in Monday."
These guys don't have the money to stock stuff either.
Right. I mean, there's that's what I'm kind of getting at, Bill. There's an overall. And I guess this is the downside of the internet. Well, you can just go on the internet and order them. Well, yeah. They're not going to get to me today.
No. And
maybe it's because there are so many different cars out there now and so many different manufacturers that it's impossible to stock for everything. And I understand that. But yeah, I don't know.
I can remember the first wave of foreign stuff, the VWs and such, and there was some expensive Scandinavian stuff some of it isn't even in business anymore. English Ford was the first car I had, a 58 Anglia, which was a small four-cylinder Ford, and the last thing the guy yelled at me when I was driving away with the car, he says, "Well, burns a little oil." Well, he should have said it held a little oil, too.
No. But it was an English Ford, a Ford made in England?
Yep, Anglia.
Yeah. So if you moved it in the morning and there was no oil on the floor, there was no oil in the car.
Yeah, it was one of those. Well, we English cars, with the exception of, my uncle, my mom's brother had a Jaguar in the early 50s, and it was a... Well, the joke used to be about English sports cars, the reason he had two seats was one for you and one for your mechanic.
Right.
Was the story I heard. Yeah, I feel really ignorant today because I just shocked to hear you, but you only have one line running tonight?
Oh, no, we just don't, there was not enough advance warning of a Friday on the front porch, so.
Yeah, well, last night was a good bunch of people, Juanita had some good things to say but I had to say I had heard so much of it before. I understand why she feels the way she does. Because I can remember when I was a kid, one of the neighborhood promoters, he was running live shows. Can you believe that? The guy was producing live shows in motel rooms for salesmen. And I couldn't believe it when I first, I said, what? And the movie situation is it me? Is it getting funnier or weirder as time goes on in that business as it is everywhere else? They have to keep hitting you harder and harder to try to get your attention and more. As I said, a friend of mine did that stuff when she was in acting school, and she said some of these callers Bill, they were downright frightening. And she said, I felt after I heard these guys, if I had their name and address, I might have turned it over to somebody. Because you don't know when somebody's sitting there fantasizing stupidity and evil, and then they might act on it.
Right, and that, that goes back to exactly the situation I was dealing with a week ago tonight. Because it was a week ago tonight that I was casting furtive glances periodically over my shoulder at the lawful gun owner who I had seen enter the stadium. And not knowing just exactly what it was that would make him go from lawful to awful and everybody else have to hit the dirt.
Yeah. And it's just that neighborhood, that area you're in is not a high crime area.
No, it's not. It's a stupid crime area. We are absolutely burned up with meth and pills.
Oh, God, yeah.
And of course, the garden variety class of god-awful drunks who wander by from time to time and do things like what I discussed with Jim a couple of nights ago that I can't even bear to even mention again.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's... I was used to seeing all kind of... Hell, I had a guy at a hockey game. Believe it or not, these two guys are fighting. I turned around and one of them fell on my wife. And I said, come on, fellas, Man, this guy hit me in the forehead. Well, I was poleaxed, and they took him away, and I stood up in the aisle, and the guy broke away and came running down, and I brought a left hand from behind my back that put him down.
Did you have a handful of nickels at the time?
I wish. But it's amazing, because you don't know what... Well, my first wife was an RN, and she found an empty Nembutal bottle under the guy's seat. And
so he was indulging in a little better living through chemistry.
Yeah. And see, that's one thing that I never had any time for in my life was downers. I'm slow enough moving myself that I don't need any help.
That's why you're a bluesman, for God's sakes. It's not like you're a speed metal harp man.
No.
I don't even know if there's such a thing as a speed metal harp man.
There was one really interesting player out of California who was with I can't think of his name now because I didn't particularly care for him, but he was really good. He was in a California band. I mean, the guy moved a lot all over the instrument, and I don't know anymore. Things are happening so quickly that it's hard for an old guy to keep up with it, you know. You don't know which way to go, and like the stuff you hear, all I hear on some stations is they're going after the medical plan on the basis of the... And, you know, one of these companies that was hired to handle the Internet stuff lines up strongly on the other side financially.
Yeah.
Who the hell hires these people? Gee, would you go out and hire somebody who's going to... Because I wonder about... Well, I think a lot of the Internet problems are just heavy. People are banging hard. People are coming in hard to try to find out about this stuff. And it's a step in the... My problem is I look at it as only a step in the right direction. And that's the important thing. But anyway, I won't tie the line up, but it amazed me. I said, wait a minute, because I thought this was an opening monologue that I might have missed one night. And I said, because it was a good, as I say, I don't know, how many shovels you carry around to dig up some of these idiots? Because, man, I can't, it just... It makes you feel like, well, maybe I'm not as nutty as I thought I was after listening to these people. I guess I'm...
Well, there's a good 40% of this country that needs to be chased down with a butterfly net.
Yeah. Well...
They misspell signs and talk about Obama being the Antichrist and, more ants.
Well, did you see what I sent you last night? That was one of our other listeners and friends sent me that thing about Thomas when he was given command of the Army of the Cumberland down there in the Chattanooga area. I hadn't seen that before. I mean, because, you know, a lot of this stuff, it's hard to get it out, a lot of the truths of different things. I'll leave you with a bit of humor. After MacArthur made it from the Philippines to Australia and he gave a speech where he first used the term, I shall return. The guys who were still hanging in on the peninsula there and hurting bad, these guys who were going on a 1,000-calorie-a-day diet and, what the hell is that peninsula they were fighting on in the Philippines, Bataan. And what happened, the guys that heard MacArthur's speech on the radio would use it, all of a sudden it began popping up amongst the soldiers. Well, I'm going to the latrine, but I shall return. You know, that's the sense of humor that these guys develop. It's like cynicism is sometimes the only way you can get by with what you're doing, you know. And, anyway, I won't keep it because I don't have too much to comment on tonight because it was just... these people are just amazingly off the wall and... Who the hell needs it? But you've got a load of it. And I'm sorry you couldn't get there because I know what it means to you from talking.
Yeah, me too.
You know, and
thanks, well, Bill. I appreciate it.
You did your best to get there, and it's just one of those things. Vehicles, that's when I thought I had arrived, when I had three vehicles, and they were all dependable. And if they weren't, I had the tools and the time and stuff to work on them and the knowledge and... Oh, well, things change. But hang in there.
I'm a-trying. Bill, you take care.
You too.
Bye now. Our buddy Mr. Stress, Bill, calling from Cleveland onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bill. This is Lou again from Phoenix. I had to call you back.
I'm so glad you did.
Well, let me tell you what just happened. As we were speaking, and I invoked the name Kathy Herod, and you kind of caught on that, Kathy Herod, then all of a sudden, my power went out.
Oh, dear.
Here I am talking about some very powerful evangelical lobbyist here in Phoenix, Arizona. It clicks in you with the name before we even start talking about it, and all of a sudden, it went pitch black in my apartment. And I'm wondering what that meant, but I had to scoff at that and not go with that flow and call you back.
I do appreciate it. And so do we dare? Is it like Beetlejuice, Lou? Do we dare say her name?
I
mean, because that'll be like three.
Let's test this, okay? Let's test this, and if my power goes out again, then I'm hanging it up and throwing in the towel.
So a woman named Herod was persecuting the transgender community in Phoenix.
There's a woman by the name of Kathy Herod. She's a powerful lawyer. She's a rather small, middle-aged, blonde, unassuming woman with a, you know, she speaks in a rather low voice, very calmly, but she's a high-powered lawyer and lobbyist, and she heads up an organization called Center for Arizona Policy. Now, she's a homophobe. She's run interference at the Capitol, and also in this case, this bathroom bill or the LGBT anti-discrimination bill came up, and Kathy Herod stuck her nose at the city council level where this was being, you know, brought up. And I just did a little more reading about it. It took like 10 years for this anti-discrimination bill to come up, and it got sacked due to, you know, the fear-mongering techniques of this evangelical Kathy Herod, who said, watch out, there could be child predators who enter the wrong bathroom. So, you know, the only reason why I called is because you were talking about it, and I thought I might just call you and let you know that two things, that, yes, there was an attempt to pass something like this last year, and, yes, it was sidelined by a very strong evangelical organization.
And Lou, again, we get to the essential question. And if you've got an answer, you're better than I am. What is the fascination of these right wing evangelicals with the potty? Were they potty trained at gunpoint? Did someone tell them when they were 3 years old that they were bad, 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 dirty little children? I'm kind of lost.
Well, okay. I have a theory on this psychosexual exclusiveness that we're seeing arise in the Republican Party, the Tea Party, and headed by this evangelical person, probably all around the country. You know, I could be calling from a different city. It's going to be the same story. Some evangelical force psychosexually argued against rights for LGBT persons. And here's my explanation is, I kind of get it out of the George Lakoff book. You know George Lakoff?
Oh, sure. Don't Talk About an Elephant.
That book, yeah. Don't Talk About an Elephant. And he basically talks about the James Dobson patriarchal conditioning that all families go through, I guess for a lack of any other direction. You know, I'm not Christian. I never was. And I wasn't raised so much, really, at all with this kind of patriarchal obedience thing. And it's based on, you know, the traditional values, traditional Christian values, which exclude any deviance such as homosexuality.
I'm even a little uncomfortable, Lou, with describing homosexuality as in any form. You know, I understand what you mean. You're talking about deviation from a perceived societal norm. But, of course, if a Christian says deviance, they mean, you know, homosexual Eurotrash zombies.
Okay, when I speak of deviance, I'm not talking from my perspective, and please, anybody listening to my voice, don't think I'm being unfair. I believe in rights for all, and that's why I'm calling you today, is to let you know that here in this town, there is indeed an evangelical lobbyist force that, you know, will enter at any time to complain and force their their will, their culture, their mores on laws, even when the laws are trying to be, you know, their intention is to be fair to everyone. No, the evangelicals, for some reason, don't even want to grant any kind of recognition to, here I go again, I don't want to use the word, anything different than what they were brought up in.
Precisely. And see, and let me tell you, we don't charge a fee for using the phrase evangelical. If E-V-I-L-G-E-L-I-C-A-L, if you want to put that into the vocabulary out there in Arizona, because yeah. I think that's far more an apt description than evangelical.
Why do you think there's this strong lobbyist political force that is insisting on their view, a sexual view of the world?
Because Lou, thus it has ever been from the moment that Christianity left the geographic confines of ancient Palestine. Because it was actually, if we take as a given the actual existence of Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer, semi-literate, itinerant rabbi, if we take that as a given, if we just say, okay, we're, you know, for the sake of the discussion, we're going to say he was real, then what he was talking about was a radical reinterpretation of Jewish culture of the first century before the Common Era. When it gets outside the territorial boundaries of Judea and Palestine, then it takes on an authoritarian flavor, thanks to St. Paul. And then once Constantine incorporates it as an official state religion, and the bishops get power and start having the authority to have people killed, then they become the gatekeepers of those societal norms that you and I were just discussing.
Yeah, but that doesn't really explain how America has adopted. I don't want to say America has definitely adopted, but that doesn't explain why there has been proliferated here in America that brand we're talking about.
Well, it kind of does, because it's a continuum, Lou, of things that have been going on for 2,000 years. And what you get is, of course, the era in which the Declaration of Independence, the Virginia Declaration of Rights, Thomas Paine's writings on the rights of man and common sense, things like that, up through the crafting and the Federalist Papers and the crafting of the Constitution of the United States. These are all elements of what is referred to historically as the Enlightenment.
Right. I understand that.
Right. Well, just work with me for a second.
Mm-hmm.
By the time, you know, Jefferson and Adams both died on July the 4th, 1826. And by the time both of those men died, they had seen their vision of the American Revolution die with them. And so, in short order, after that, along comes a sort of reinvigoration of Protestant Calvinism in all its hateful glory that becomes known as the Great Awakening. And then there's a second Great Awakening.
Right.
And it is this puritanical Calvinism that has always run under it's been an undercurrent to American culture, especially as people spread out in the westward expansion and things like scholarliness and study were replaced by emotionalism for people who were fundamentally illiterate.
Well, I'm illiterate. Okay, illiteracy can explain it, but I'm talking about the kind of stupidity that created, for example, the Salem witch trial. I mean, that type of stupidity.
Well, it's not just stupidity, Lou. It's authoritarianism, and that is probably the most pernicious and deeply buried seed inside religion or Christian religion in particular. But it also exists inside, say, fundamentalist Islam or fundamentalist Judaism or any of the other fundamentalisms, because and that's, you know, that's one of my theses in the course of this long-term discussion that's now eight years and a day old, is that if all the various religious fundamentalists ever figure out that they've got more in common with each other than they do with the rest of us relatively normal people, then that's the day that we really are screwed.
Well, don't you think this recent shutdown thing brought that out? I mean, they make no bones about it. We are waiting. We are looking. We're going to make the end time.
Right, and that's another one of those moments where you just kind of shake your head and hear the marbles rolling around, because if they're waiting for Jesus to come back in his holy rolls and call them up into the sky, and then of course they'll have blood curdling fights among each other as to whether or not they're going to be raptured fully clothed or naked, really. But at the same time, they're worrying about long-term debt. You know, you get to have one, but not the other.
To answer your question, though, I put it to you that this type of conditioning, I think, starts in the home. The Lakoff book is very revealing about, you know, conditioning young people towards a certain attitude, obedience towards this authoritarianism you speak of.
Oh, I think you're right, and you're getting some positive responses in the chat room, by the way, Lou.
That's great.
Cosmic Michael saying, Lakoff's book, Moral Politics, is especially the real deal. And Richard pointing out, anything by George Lakoff is required reading. So, your ideas are well received.
Yeah, I wanted to talk to George Lakoff last year. I didn't get the opportunity, but he's also very astute with his, as you can read his books, every book, I think, has got a preamble about his orientation towards language. So, basically, Bob, what I'm letting you know is that these forces exist, I think, in every town. And they're like independent Medusa heads of the snake. You know, you cut off the head, and they'll still act independently because they're guided by their religion.
I think you're right, but I think it is probably it's probably worse in certain areas of the country than others. There are fundamental evangelicals everywhere in this country, but they are more readily to be found in, say, a little rural area like mine in Appalachistan, or a place that has a bunch of red state right wing transplants like Arizona. That, you know, there you are. You share a common border with California, and yet the politics of the two states could not be more profoundly different, could they?
No kidding. Very, very diametrically different. No kidding. We've got Jan Brewer here, who I know you're probably aware of.
Yeah, I call her Old Hatchet Face.
And we also have Joe Arpaio here, and I'm sure you know who that is too.
On the other hand, though, you've got some real progressive heroes too. For instance, Raul Grijalva. There is no better human being in the House of Representatives than Raul Grijalva.
Yes.
And there are a few others. Kristen Sinema comes to mind.
Okay, she still is, the jury is out on her.
Oh, really?
Yes, because recently she voted with the Republicans on two votes. For example, she voted yes to allow, during the shutdown thing, when it was arranged that only one person could bring stuff up for a vote, Eric Cantor. You know that little rule?
Oh, yes.
She voted in favor of that. She also voted in favor of delaying the ACA for a year. And so this took, we progressives here in Arizona took notice of that. Yes, we did.
That's a little disturbing. Might it be chalked up to the fact that she's kind of a noob?
That she's new? No. She did the same thing when she was a state representative.
Oh, yuck. I kind of hate to hear that, Lou.
There was a human smuggling bill, on the immigration issue. When immigrants have congregated in a store ready and able to go to work, and Arizona passed a law that if you pick somebody up and you don't know that they're undocumented, even you could be penalized and charged with a crime. So an extension of that, another bill like that, was called the Human Smuggling Bill, which made punishment or jail time, et cetera, for picking somebody up even worse. And that was very odd. That was very odd. Sorry about that, Kirsten. It was a three-way race, and I wish David Shapira, who is already in the state legislature and a very astute, progressive guy, I wish he would have gotten the nod. But
was that a case of, do you think that was a case of sexual politics?
Explain that question.
Well, I understood that Ms. Sinema enjoys the support of the LGBT community.
Yeah, yes, she does. Yes, she does. She does enjoy that support. That's a good way of putting it. She does enjoy that support, and it could very well be that she relied on that support to get her through, despite any anything that could be perceived as wrong in her, because there was some talk about her attitude in voting for the human smuggling bill. There was some talk about that. Another thing is there was an appearance at the local PBS station with the three candidates. It was David Shapira, a guy named Cherney, I can't remember his first name, and Kirsten. Kirsten didn't even show up. She just felt so confident that she was going to win the primary, she did not show up.
That kind of, one either learns to get rid of attitudes like that, or attitudes like that burn you. I remember what is now a very long time ago, when Robert Byrd, actually, Senator Byrd, looked at me and said, "Son, there's only two ways to run an election race, unopposed and scared to death."
But boom, yes.
And it's the absolute truth. If you make any kind of assumptions, you may get away with it once. You won't. You probably won't get away with it more than twice.
Right.
Because the electorate of any given community does not like being taken for granted.
Yes, and I'm looking forward to the 2014 elections to see how the American people respond to the national effort to be taken for granted.
I'm obviously, based on what's been going on here for 8 years plus, interested as well. But I am highly skeptical, Lou, of this notion that America has had it with the teabaggers and we're just going to throw them out. Because I recognize the nature of the gerrymandered districts, and I recognize the vast amounts of money that the Sheldon Adelsons and the Koch brothers and yada, yada, yada have to throw into races. And I also remember that in 2012, nationally, once you tallied up all the votes for all the House races, the Democrats came away with a huge margin of electoral popular vote victory if you examine it on a national scale. It didn't make a hill of beans a difference because, well, look where we are and why are we in this handbasket? So
I think you're right about the gerrymandering. It's almost like we're stuck. But I'm hoping that a lot of people will wake up and remember. That's the whole problem is there's not a whole lot of remembering because every time you turn around, there's some new distraction, new scrimmage line, new wedge issue. Something new to distract us from what has been and to create some sort of false equivalency and something for us to, you know, argue about.
Right, and if it's not that, then Honey Boo Boo Child has come up with a new energy drink made out of Mountain Dew, Monster Energy Beverage, Red Bull, and Kool-Aid. And that's sufficient to eat up the American psyche for two solid weeks.
There's a couple of things that come to mind with that. First of all, David Byrne, who David Byrne is.
Oh, absolutely.
New York, he recently, I didn't read it, but he recently came out with a thought, the gist of which was, the Internet is going to make people stupid. And then who else is it who recently came out, some notable, I can't remember his name, a notable writer.
Jonathan Franzen.
Who said that the Internet is going to make us stupid. And
well, Jonathan Franzen went even further. He said that the Internet should be strictly regulated, almost like an addictive substance. And, there's a certain amount of truth to that. I mean, I love cute photos of cats, and that is apparently the entire reason for Facebook to exist. But, we all get into our little niches of where it is we go on the interweb tubes. Almost everywhere I go is either political or sports or funny. I don't see these things, but apparently the world is obsessed with the what should we call it? The trivial minutia.
Yeah, yeah.
somebody else's daily life.
This is something I'd like you to consider. It's an interesting question. How far do you indulge someone arguing with you until you get to the point where you basically just eradicate them, block them, delete them, and you don't want to deal with that anymore? I mean, how far? Everybody has a different level of tolerance. I've reached mine about 6 months ago, where I'm really not interested in interacting or arguing with people on the other side of me ideologically, because I've heard all their arguments. I've heard of all their arguments. I'm tired of all their arguments. And
Lou, I run from them now. I very seldom post anything oppositional to a teabagger, because I realize that the ultimate end game of arguing with a teabagger is that you have just won an argument with a teabagger.
Uh-huh.
And at that point in time, it seems like very much a futile act. And it, because for my part, you know, this is a story that I told, I guess, last week or maybe early this week. I can't remember now. They all run together. When I run a real risk on any given day of having a real live human person in my immediate space inform me that Barack Obama is a secret Muslim who is out to destroy Christianity, I don't need to see that crap on the internet. It's disturbing enough in it's past disturbing in real life.
Then here's one for you. Being on the internet is one way, but as you go through your daily life, and as you go down to the grocery store, or you walk along the street, and you see the faces of some of these people, you got to know that there are people out there you can see every day who honestly believe in all of that, 100%.
Absolutely. I mean, the shorthand for that, you know, here in the Horn Family Commune is they walk among us.
Yeah.
And you never know when or where or how. It could just be somebody going over your blood work results, and the next thing you know, you're being told Obama's a Muslim.
So were there any arguments you overheard in grocery stores during the last election?
Oh, God, I can't walk into the little Rippy Mart convenience store 2 miles down the road from me without hearing an Obama N-word joke on any given night, Lou.
And they ought to know who you are, right? They
we don't advertise that, but no, I've had a couple of those moments where I just looked at him and said, really, honest to God, are you that stupid and racist and bigoted? You realize this isn't good for business, right?
Right. That's true. And you know what? That's a conservative argument. That's a Republican argument, you know.
Oh, but you mean the profit angle? You're damn right it is.
All I'm saying is that, you know, if someone is so ornery, you should stay away from them so they don't make the profit. So eventually, through natural selection of the free market, they lose their business. But for some reason, those safeguards are not happening. That's not happening. It's not happening fast enough.
No, it's like this story, the story out of Kansas that I had at the top of the program about some 20-year-old young man who is definitely not wearing a shirt that says, hey, I'm gay, who gets stiffed by a table full of Christians who leave him this note all about how homos don't partake of God's wealth, and therefore they're not leaving him a tip.
But wasn't that guy eventually rewarded by someone? Didn't someone come forth and give him some money?
Well, no, he's refused all that, but tonight, you know, lots of friends and supporters are dining at Carrabba Italian Grill. So, you know, I guess it turned out to be good for business.
So, how about this? I mean, I think that we really need these labeling laws, you know, to know what our food is, what's in our food, and also what's the ideology of whatever store we want to walk into. There should be a rating at the door that explains their ideology, so we'll know to avoid them.
Well, and
how's that for an idea?
Absolutely. And how's this? Remember, these right wingers despise civil rights laws. So how about a business puts a sign up that says we reserve the right to refuse service to bigots, homophobes, racists, and Tea Partiers.
Right, right.
And you get asked, the minute you walk through the door, good morning, are you a racist, bigot, homophobe, or tea partier? And the guy goes, well, you can have my gun. Never mind, we refuse your service. Please leave before we call the police.
And then, of course, that business would be soon out of business, too. I don't know what to tell you. If business was better all around the country, then I bet there'd be a better quality of culture. There'd be a much better quality of culture if business was much better all around the country. Don't you think so? Because these businesses could afford to do something like that.
Well, sure, and take into account also that, I mean, what kind of business person are you if your ideology comes before, or idiotology, comes before your desire to make a nickel? I mean, this is the free market capitalist wonderland America, isn't it? It's all about making a buck. Calvin Coolidge said the business of America is business. That ought to be on the currency, for God's sakes.
Well, you know, I think an old argument was keep religion out of government, and that's still going on. But a new argument in this day and age is keep religion out of business. There are businesses out there who predominantly operate as a religious kind of business, and as long as they stay under, I think, 45 employees or 50 employees, they can do that kind of thing. It's unfortunate.
It's past unfortunate. It's pitiful. But if you say anything about open access or anything along those lines, then you get Star Parker talking to that porn stash from Wingnut Daily, talking about how the Obama administration has forced the homosexual violence into the streets of America.
You know, I heard you play that earlier, and I have this question about it. Is the idea that if we don't pay these people any attention, could it possibly help them go away? And now, I don't want to, you know, cast any aspersions on you.
No, I understand. Believe me, that's an internal debate that I have with myself constantly. But I think the conclusion that I've reached, Lou, is that we ignore them at their peril, our peril.
Yeah.
Because it was by operating in the, you know, once upon a time before the Internet, if you wanted to be this way, you had to stand over a mimeograph machine huffing that Ditto fluid, you know?
Right.
And you had to hand crank your little handbills out and pass them out at your little clavern meeting.
Or, if you missed a radio program, there were very few, if any, periodicals that recapped what was spoken on the radio the day before. Now we can get podcasts and read ad infinitum analysis of what someone said and how someone reacted to it.
Yeah. I mean, I was trying to calculate just how many hours of archives that we've got back there and how many hours we've served out in the last 8-plus years, and it's a pretty staggering number.
Yeah, you know what you've done, and I know what I've done, and I've got these little memories, and they're great, but I'll be damned if I can invite anybody to go and listen to a program of their choice. There's just too many hours, too much ink, too many screens, too much information. What do you think of that?
It's just out there, Lou. I mean, people. I think Bill was talking just a few days ago about how he just wandered out and picked up a show from 2005 and started listening to it. Maybe it wasn't Bill. Maybe it was somebody else. It's all there, and so you just have to live with it. And there are nights that I close the mic and crawl into a corner, curl up into a fetal ball, and suck my thumb.
Yeah.
Just because it's just awful.
Well, you're not alone. I'm sure that there's a lot of people out there who do shows that offer ideas and open access and truth, so to speak, that are also frustrated. But they come back and continue it the next day anyway, you know?
And for anybody who does that, Lou, I have profound admiration, because if you commit to something like this, and we've seen it in the course of the Horn's existence, if you commit to something like this, sometimes you don't understand right off the bat the nature of the commitment. I mean, it's behind the microphone every day, every night, unless you're deathly ill or you have to be gone or something like that.
whether you feel like it or not, because otherwise it's a hobby.
Right. Well, you do it, and so I admire you.
Well, thank you, Lou. Thank you very kindly.
Now, I did call originally to tell you that this phenomenon of evangelical interference, I'll call it, it certainly does happen here in Phoenix, but after all of the different things that we spoke about, I'm wondering, you know, God, is there any one great thing I've learned here that can be useful in the fight? And I can't come up with anything because I'm so overwhelmed and disappointed with the stupidity of the, what'd you call them, the morons?
Well, yeah, but evangelicals.
Evangelicals, just for starters.
But I think that's the beginning of wisdom, Lou. Is to realize that this toxicity is out there, that one should be cognizant of it and on alert for it. Because these people operate, they've got their dog whistles and their code language, and it's like one of those Star Trek earworm things. It just crawls right in, and people don't even know it's happening to them.
Now, earlier, a moment ago, you asked the question, how can we, you know, break this cycle of the Tea Party having such control and the proliferation of such stupidity? Like, for example, Sarah Palin saying, you know, mentioning that Jesus once celebrated Easter.
Wait, I gotta stop you. That was a gag. I almost got hooked by it early today, too. Because she's so stupid, you can imagine her saying that. But that was from the Daily Current, and they're sort of an onion.
I believe it.
I believed it, too. But they're an onion wannabe, and as soon as I saw Daily Current, I went, oh, somebody's having us on.
The Onion's quitting fairly soon, so that's great. At any rate, you asked the question, how can we break this cycle of this stupidity that has a hold on our politics and our way of life and our culture? A couple of years ago, it was like 2 years ago, and I was listening to the radio, and someone commented that they predicted that the corporate Republicans would be taking over the Tea Party. The corporate Republicans would step in and put a stop to this Tea Party idiocy and madness. And I think that prediction was correct. And so I would hope, even though I'm not a Republican, I would hope that that's what would happen in the Republican Party, and that the Tea Party would be squashed like the do-nothing party was back in the whenever that you...
Well, actually, the know-nothings got folded into the nascent Republican Party. They didn't disappear, which is kind of... which is kind of a model for the Tea Party. And to say that corporate control would step in and manage the Tea Party, corporate money is already running the Tea Party. The Koch brothers financed the existence of the Tea Party. That's where Americans for Prosperity comes from. So they're already there. I personally just happen to think that if we write them off and say, huh, well, they're a bunch of lunatics with their bad spelling and their stupid clothing and their dumb hats. Well, we did that once. Look how many people stayed home in 2010, Lou. What did we get?
So what was your question? How many, what?
Yeah, how many millions of people stayed home in 2010, and look how the Tea Party took over the House of Representatives?
Of course. Too many.
Yeah, because we ignored them as being a bunch of idiots. But they were idiots who had a lot of money and were able to field a slate of candidates, and that's how you get the shutdown.
So essentially, we overestimated the intelligence of the American people.
Right. And of course, there's that was it Will Rogers who said no one will ever go broke underestimating the intelligence of the American people?
And Bob, tell me, cuz I seem to forget. Who was it who said, there's a sucker born every minute?
That is ascribed to, or attributed to, P.T. Barnum, who if he really said it, well, he had a prophetic streak now, didn't he? And he also invented this way to the egress.
Right. The exit, the egress. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Bob, I enjoyed sharing some thoughts with you. I guess I'll have to reflect on all the different things that we said, and I'll let you know.
Okay, that's fine. Chime in anytime. It's been a lovely conversation.
Thank you.
You have a good evening and a great weekend.
Me too, Bob!
All right. Bye now.
Bye.
Lou, calling from Arizona. Kind of a segue. A little bit of history. Here it is, about 21 minutes before the hour, wrapping up this, not really a Front Porch Friday, but that's understandable since we had Thorn in the Front Porch Thursday. We know, for instance, that Mr. Strass, Bill, is a student of the Civil War. It is a little-known fact that the last battle of the Civil War, east of the Mississippi, that is said to have been the Battle of Munford, M-U-N-F-O-R-D, Munford. Munford in Talladega County, Alabama, home of the very famous raceway. It happened on Sunday, April the 23rd, 1865. 1,500 Union cavalry under General John T. Croxton were raiding through Alabama, and Confederate convalescents, home guards, and pardoned deserters stood up to oppose them. Remember, the war was over. And yet these treason committers decided that they didn't like the American cavalry riding through Talladega County. General Benjamin Jefferson Hill was commanding the, what are they, re-treasoners at this point? And Confederate Lieutenant Lewis E. Parsons fired a couple of rounds at the cavalry before they were overrun. There was one Union troop, one American trooper killed, and one Confederate killed that day in Munford in Talladega County, Alabama, on April the 23rd, 1865. Fast forward, 148 years later. Well, not really. More like 149 and change. Also in Munford, Alabama, where we find proud son of the South, Allen Wayne Denson Morgan. Who has, I guess you could say he's a proud foot soldier in what I refer to as the Cold Civil War. And we can probably safely posit that he has heard a bunch of the teabagging craziness that Lou and I were just discussing. Allen Wayne Denson Morgan, aged 29, according to pleadings, you know, when I reference the fact that it's according to pleadings, you know it's not going to end well. Caption and style of the case, United States District Court, Northern District of Alabama. Criminal complaint, United States of America versus Allen Wayne Denson Morgan. I, Cornelius Harris, Jr., the undersigned complainant, being duly sworn, state the following is true and correct to the best of my knowledge and belief. On or about August 25th, 2013, in Calhoun County, in the Northern District of Alabama, defendant Allen Wayne Denson Morgan did use and caused to be used a facility of interstate commerce, that being a motor vehicle and a telephone, with intent that the murder of Clifford Maurice Mosley be committed in violation of the laws of the state of Alabama as consideration for the receipt of a thing of value, that being a necklace and a watch, in violation of Title 18, United States Code, Section 1958. I further state that I am a special agent with the Federal Bureau of Investigation and that this complaint is based on the following facts. On August 22, 2013, at approximately 10:15 a.m., an FBI undercover informant who purported himself to be a member of the Ku Klux Klan telephonically contacted Allen Wayne Denson Morgan to verify Morgan's desire to hire someone to murder Clifford Maurice Mosley A man, Morgan, believes raped his wife, Sarah Marie Ward Morgan, days earlier. During the initial moments of the telephone call, Morgan excitedly told the agent, the informer, that he had just confronted Mosley outside a house near his residence of 115 Judy Lane, Munford, Alabama. As Mosley sat in the passenger seat of a Jeep, Morgan described how he confronted Mosley with his wife's laser-equipped semi-automatic pistol. Oh, goody! He's a lawful, awful gun owner. Wolverines! Freedom! Morgan said he attempted to force a confrontation by firing multiple rounds of ammunition at Mosley. Though he fired several shots, Morgan said it was not his intent to kill Mosley in that moment, as several people were present. He didn't want to do it if anybody was watching. Mosley fled on foot as Morgan fired several shots in the ground beside him in an effort to intimidate him. Morgan assessed that Mosley must be guilty of the rape of his wife because Mosley never tried to defend himself by standing his ground or offering to reason with Morgan. Because that's what you do. When the lawful gun owner pulls out his freedom protector, screams Wolverines, and starts blabbering about freedom and standing one's ground, one stands and reasons with the man with the gun. Because one may assume that he's only going to shoot at the ground after all. Morgan described himself as an expert marksman who could have killed Mosley had he chosen to do so. You know what? I'm an expert with this here pistol shooting gun, and if I'd have meant to kill him, I'd have killed him. I promise you that. So the agent advises he's traveling and en route to Tennessee to pick up a partner to take care of this matter for Morgan. This is in a telephone conversation. He reassured Morgan that he had reached out to the right people and wanted him to settle down. Morgan then advised that his wife, Sarah Marie Ward Morgan, is a patient at Mountain View Hospital and described her alibi as being airtight. Morgan suggested that he also considered checking himself into a VA hospital, or set up some sort of appointment to give himself an alibi. Morgan agreed to meet with the agents on Sunday, August 25th, 2013, at a location to be determined. Morgan advised that he and his family are supportive of the plan to murder Clifford Maurice Mosley. His father-in-law, Walter Ward, and mother-in-law, Ginger Gaither Ward, want to dynamite the entire block. How cold is this cold civil war again? Morgan described how he wanted Clifford Maurice Mosley murdered by stating, "I want this man hung from a tree like he's an animal. I want his dick cut off and I want him cut. You're a hunting man, right? I want him hung from a tree and gutted and left him hung in that tree. You don't have to leave him hanging in that tree, but that's how I want him to die. Die a slow, painful death, and that's it. You know what I'm saying?" And the informant said, "Oh, we're not roughing anybody up. We're talking about dead. When they give us a call and give us a green light, that's what we're going for, just to make sure you're good with that." And then Morgan said, "Well, talk about payment." And then on August 25th, 2013, at approximately 3:30 p.m., Morgan and the two undercovers got together at the Econo Lodge Motel at 25 Elm Street, Oxford, Alabama. They call it Oxpatch. At which point in time, Morgan told the two FBI agents that he'd pay him money to commit the murder of Clifford Maurice Mosley. But then he said, "But I ain't got no money, because I'm a disabled United States Army veteran, and my wife has control of my monthly money check." So then he gives him directions to his house, to Mosley's house in Munford, Alabama. He printed it out and circled it and provided circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back from Google Maps. He also described Mosley's physical characteristics and said his picture could be easily obtained from a sex offender website. He then offered as payment a watch and a necklace from his person. Then he said, "I also got a gun I give you." At which point, Morgan was arrested and admitted, confessed, basically, after being read his rights. Because, you know, we want to read unreconstructed Confederates their rights, but, well. Have I mentioned that Mr. Mosley has a skin tone considerably darker than that of Alan Wayne Denson Morgan? 29 years old, disabled veteran of the United States Army. So to review, this guy who is so disabled that somebody else has control of his government money check knows that he has a convicted sex offender living in his neighborhood, and it sits there and just corkscrews into his brain until he decides that he can hire the Klan to lynch Mr. Mosley in exchange for a watch, a necklace, and a handgun to be named later. And convinces himself further that Mr. Mosley is most assuredly guilty because when he shot at him, he didn't stand his ground. Wolverines! Again, we ignore these teabagging freaks at our peril. Thanks, Irish Dave. Maybe that line about not going broke, underestimating the American people came from H.L. Mencken. Entirely possible. Meanwhile, in North Carolina, this.
This first thing I want to tell you before I get into anything else, I noticed on Facebook recently that there was somebody had posted something with a picture of Barack Obama and a cross that said traitor. And, I don't always agree with guys. I certainly didn't vote for him, but I've got to defend him on this one. I just don't think it's right at all to call Barack Obama a traitor. There's a lot of things he's done wrong, but he's not a traitor, at least not as far as I can tell, because I've not come across any evidence yet that he has done one thing to harm Kenya.
He'll be here all week. Try the veal. Don't tip your homosexual waiter. Now that's not just your Monday lunch meeting of the Clavern there in North Carolina stand. That is an elected member of the North Carolina legislature by the name of representing Larry Pittman. Did you hear the monkeys laugh? And a couple of claps. I don't care who you are. That's funny. Ain't never done. Did you hear that, Marveline? He said he ain't never done nothing to hurt Kenya. Oh my goodness! Wait till I tell him that. Wait till I tell him that one again down to the Sunday school next week. Oh my goodness! I haven't had a knee slapper like that in a while. Nothing to hurt Kenya. You get it? Get it, Kenya? Get it? Oh my goodness! But of course, the teabaggers have learned their lesson from the shutdown, and they're going to start behaving now. Right?
No, I didn't think so either.
So we find ourselves at the end of this here Friday on the front porch. Lynching for hire in Alabama stand. Kenyan jokes in North Carolina stand. Waiters stiffed in Kansas. Fundies worrying about the potty again over at Wingnut Bailey. Goodness me. Goodness me.
Goodness!
And for whatever lunacy else comes our way, well, I reckon we're just gonna have to wait till more end Monday. And if these guys couldn't be held over till more end Monday, imagine what more end Monday holds for us. So thanks, everybody, for everything you do to keep this whole process going and that you have done over the last 8 years to continue this little community, this band of siblings. Thank you for your kind contributions, your emails, your tweets, your Facebook postings, your communications via Skype. Thank you. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thanks to Duncan, who is the long-serving, long-suffering moderator of the Horn Malloy post-show Skype chat group, whom I assume will be having at it this very evening at about 12:05 Eastern Time, later as of Saturday morning. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to John Fox. And thanks to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks, of course, always go out to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACHECT, ACHECT.org. ACHECT.org. That's where you go if you want to be part of the effort to bring an end to what the New York Times referred to as Appalachia's agony. If you want to help us end mountaintop removal, go to ACHECT.org, learn the science, and then reach out and demand that your member of the House of Representatives sign on to H.R. 526 and that your senators support the introduction of a companion bill in the Senate of the United States of America. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Have a great weekend, everybody. Rick Smith is next on the Horn.